Welcome to Funnel Hacker Radio Podcast, where we go behind the scenes and uncover the tactics and strategies top entrepreneurs are using to make more sales, dominate their markets, and how you can get those same results. Here is your host, Dave Woodward.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to Funnel Hacking Radio. I am so excited today. I had the opportunity to bring in on a dear friend of mine who has been a mentor of mine, actually a guy I've loved getting to know better. And I want to introduce you guys to Nick Sonnenberg.
Thanks for having
Welcome
me.
To the show. I am so excited. For those of you guys who don't,
go ahead. I'm honored to be called a mentor.
You are. No, honestly, it's one of the things I am so impressed. So for those of you guys who don't know Nick, this is a guy who's been an ex-high-frequency trader from Wall Street. He's the CEO of Leverage, which is a company I've got a ton of admiration for. They're totally disrupting the agency model. But the part I love is the way in which you think, Nick, is blows my mind. You have this ability to look at super, super complex problems and be able to minimize it down to the very key factors and to communicate it in a way that so many other people can understand. We're just talking about this whole idea that you've got a new book coming out, Come Up for Air, where you've consulted, one and two type of employee businesses, consulted Tony Robbins, consulted large, huge companies as well. And I think the part I love just as every time I talk to you is just to see, I mean, your mind races at this crazy, crazy pace, and yet you slow things down so well to be able to explain things to people that it's like, oh, I get it. And I'm just totally impressed with that. So I don't have that skill set. And so when I see someone like you who does, I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm so impressed.
Well, thank you very much. I'll give you a story to piggyback off of that. So my first day of grad school, I went to Berkeley for my master's. I did financial engineering. And the very first day, they said, look, you're going to be learning rocket science here, but the real goal is that you should be able to explain these concepts to a five-year-old. And that's really how you know that you've mastered a subject, is if you can explain it very clearly and in a simple way. So it's a big honor for you to say that to me, because that's something that really has sat with me since grad school.
Well, I love it. Again, it's one of the things I've always, every time I talk with Russell, I love, he spends so much time on trying to get down to even a little doodle and a drawing for that same principle. I mean, there's a lot of people who will talk over people's heads and think that this, techno babble and everything else is going to flatter people. All it does is confuse them and actually pushes people further away. And when you talk with people like yourself, with Russell, it literally draws people to you. We were at CNC and I saw you, just hordes of people just trying to get your attention just to talk with you because of that.
You were the one with the hordes. I had the mini horde. But no, like when I speak to people and I can't understand what they're talking about, I usually, the first thing that starts going on in my head is, I don't think this person's really a master of what they're talking about if they're explaining it in such a complex way.
I love that concept. I want to kind of expound on that. One of the things we're going to get to here later in the podcast is what Leverage is doing right now on the fixed pricing of funnels. So hold tight to the end because you want to hear that for sure. Mm-hmm. But I want to talk to you about one of the things you and I were talking about, this whole idea as far as the power of pausing to go faster. And for those of you guys who have been following our journey as far as ClickFunnels, I'll announce it right now. We are going to be changing our podcast to where right now we're at 78,000 customers. And we're going to change the kind of the idea behind the podcast to bring on more people like yourself who understand scale and really invite people on our journey to get to 100, to build a culture of 100,000 customers or users here before the end of this year. But to do it, and it's one of the things you and I were just discussing was when you build a company as an entrepreneur, so little backstory here. Last week we were at Julie Stoyan, who's our VP of marketing, had all of our marketing team in, and we spent a bunch of time. Russell was there kind of identifying what the forefront is going to be as far as all these other funnels we want to do. But the one thing I realized was for our team, one of the things that's hard is the speed at which we go. And it's what you and I were talking about. I suffer from PTSD as an entrepreneur of having cycled a couple of times and understanding the fear of, oh my gosh, if I lose it, and so I keep going, I have the gas going all the time. And yet, as you and I were just talking about, you have this ability to really understand the power of pausing to go faster. If you don't mind, can you expound on that?
Totally. And there was a great book. I'm going to look up the name. It's called Wait, which is all about the power of pausing. But yeah, what we were talking about before is once you go live with a company and you have customers to support, I mean, that's it. Like, you have to put a huge amount of focus on maintaining the the system supporting your clients, making sure that they're well supported. So sometimes when you grow too quickly, things break, and then a lot of time that you have to invest down the road is spent on kind of fixing issues that kind of arose from premature scaling. So in software development, you have a concept that is, what's it called? It's called code. Oh my God, I'm blanking right now. Debt. You have technical debt.
Tech debt.
Just like, and what that basically means is, you know, you've hard coded some product or some feature that you want to do, but not in a super scalable way. So in a year or in 2 years from now, since it wasn't done in such an abstract way, you're going to have to redo it because inevitably, whatever you thought you need now, you're going to get feedback from people and things and needs are going to change and you're going to have to change it. And the more time that you kind of invest, it's always a trade-off, right? Like if you were to try to make something as abstract as possible now, you move slower to get that feature released, but then you have less technical debt. And just like there's technical debt in coding, you have operational debt in companies, right? The quicker you launch or do whatever it is, that's it. Like you don't have the bandwidth or you have less bandwidth now to go back and document processes or think through, is this the best process? And could we automate things? Because at the end of the day, you have these people to support and it's really hard to find the bandwidth to go back and revisit a process, document it, automate various things. So like what I did, we at Leverage, we grew to 7 figures the first year, fully bootstrapped. We had like 100 people at the end of that year. And we moved so fast that a lot of stuff broke and it was really hard to go back and find the bandwidth to fix it. Because we were just having to support the current clients. So what I ended up doing actually last year is I shut off marketing for a whole year.
Just you're to focus kidding.
Yeah, it was one of those.
Oh my gosh.
I got the team together and I'm like, and I said to them and they all freaked out. I'm like, we're shutting up.
I'm freaking out. Just listen to this. I'm like, I feel the pain.
I was like, yeah, you heard me. We're going to do a year of zero marketing and we're just going to focus on internal processes, procedures, quality of service. We don't, and what I said to them was, we don't need one single more client. We just need to retain what we have and engage what we have more and improve our internal efficiencies to drive profit margins up. And it was a really kind of contrarian type of way of thinking about things. People always say, you know, sales sells, but I don't know, sometimes sales doesn't solve everything because if you're a new startup, sometimes selling and getting more customers and you haven't really dialed into product market fit or internal efficiencies, sometimes sales could hurt you more than it helps you.
That's fascinating.
At least that's my experience.
No, it's honestly, it was just so fascinating for me as we sat down with, again, we had probably 25, 26 of our team members this last week and Julie was kind of running the show and I'm hit and miss in and out of meetings and stuff. And I heard, it was Friday and it was kind of a people bringing together kind of their ideas for the whole week. And they were talking about, you know, what are the good things? What are the bad things? What are the things they'd like to change? And one of the things that kept coming up was this idea of speed. And I'm like, I know like one speed and that's fast forward as fast as I can go. And yet I also realized as you grow as an entrepreneur, as you grow as an executive in your team, you have to understand that not everybody goes at the same pace you do. And for some, that speed really, it creates so much stress for them. I was shocked to see just the anxiety it created and how, and so I love hearing you saying you literally shut down. I can't do that.
No. And look, you guys are super impressive. Like what you and Russell have built over there, I am really amazed by it. But you know, a lot of people move fast, but moving fast in the wrong direction doesn't really help you either, yeah, right?
So that's true.
It's better to move a bit slower, but make sure you're going the right direction. So it's always a balance of speed versus kind of being a little bit more long-term focused. But in a lot of cases, like when I've pushed the team, hey, this needs to get out by next week, something like that, stuff breaks or it wasn't thought out in a very systematic way. And we find that we end up moving fast in the wrong direction and the whole thing was a waste of money in some cases, not in all, but so yeah, it's just something, there's sometimes a benefit to going slower.
So is that the premise of your next book, Come Up for Air?
No.
So what's Come Up for Air?
So Come Up for Air kind of is, it naturally came out of my experience with building Leverage, which is a fully remote, you know, bootstrapped company, as well as from my consulting business where I go into companies and help them improve and optimize and automate their internal systems and processes from a process operational / tech point of view. So in my experience with consulting and at Leverage, I found that there is this pattern and everyone kind of struggles with three main areas of their business. So I wrapped a little framework around it called CPR, which stands for Communicate, Plan, and Resource. And I realized one day that all companies were struggling in these three areas. And it was something that I realized without realizing it at the time was a framework that we were running Leverage by without it being formal. So the first thing is communication. And I realized most companies are not communicating efficiently. There's all these new tools out there like Slack and Asana and all these things that a lot of startups know about, but a lot of mainstream companies that have been around for 20 years have never even heard of, right? And then also, even if you're a startup, like I'm sure you guys, are you guys using Slack at ClickFunnels?
Me too. Yeah.
Right. So first of all, it's one thing to know about certain tools, but it's another thing to know when you should use a certain tool. Like when should you use email versus Slack versus text message, right? Versus a project management software. So that's like the first thing. People have never, when you got hired at a company, you get an employee manual of vacation days or insurance, but it doesn't tell you, hey, we use this type of tool for this type of tool for that. So I was consulting for Ethereum. They were a 1200 person company. They were using Slack, but it was misconfigured and they didn't have naming conventions for channels. They weren't using third-party app integrations. They had the wrong notification preferences. And I calculated that because of these inefficiencies, they were probably losing about $1 million a month. Something as silly as, no, but when you have 1,000 people, I mean, this was a really extreme case, but when you have like 1,000 people in a Slack channel and it's nonstop all day at channel, like what's the Wi-Fi password or at channel, who wants to do yoga this morning? And everyone has the wrong notification preferences and they're just getting distracted. There's all that research that if you're in a flow state, it takes you like 10 minutes to get back into it. So, you know, if it takes you 10 seconds to read each of these messages and it happens 100 times a day, and then you take people's average rate and you take that 1,000 eyeballs are getting distracted, it was massive. So not to get off too far off topic. So Come Up for Errors is kind of like that employee handbook that you never got, where it at a high level, it teaches you how to think about the different types of tools, when to use a communication tool versus a project management tool versus documenting knowledge. So then it goes a bit deeper into each of those. So what's the difference between internal versus external communication, right? So Slack for internal, email for external. Then I go into best practices. Okay, how do you optimize Slack? Then look at email. How do you optimize email? How do you actually get to inbox zero? The best way to get to inbox zero is to get to email zero. So a lot of people have a lot of email because they're using it when they shouldn't be using it. So then the next part on planning, it's like, okay, well, when do you use a project management software versus a communication tool? A lot of people are project managing via text or via Slack when it really belongs in a project management tool, which is what it's used for, and you can capture state and a whole bunch of other stuff. Because in a communication tool, the problem is it gets lost and then you start having to scroll. And at a high level, the name of the game is be able to know what you have to work on as a manager, know what people are doing, and be able to find information as quickly as possible. Like at the end of the day, that's it with all these tools. So creating guidelines and best practices with when and how best to use these different types of tools is kind of what I'm trying to achieve with the book. And then the R for resource is the most overlooked thing, but most companies are not thinking about documenting knowledge. And I have a difference between static and dynamic knowledge in the book. So static knowledge would just be like an internal wiki, like what's the Wi-Fi password? What are the core values? What's the vision? It's just, you know, where can I find that document? But then you have what I call dynamic, which are processes. So doing payroll? Like, how do you, what is the process of doing payroll? And can you generate a checklist to make sure that all the steps are done? And what, when you document knowledge, a couple things happen. One, you de-risk the company so that if someone leaves, you have the knowledge there. So that de-risks the company, makes it faster to get someone else on board. But the second thing that it does is you save money, because a lot of time is spent looking up information or wasting people's time to get information. So that all gets saved. But probably the biggest impact that you get is it really sparks innovation, because once you've documented something, now you can allow for other people to take a look at how other people do their job and give suggestions, because fresh eyes spark innovation. If you have new people looking at how payroll is done or how the onboarding process is done, all of a sudden you're going to start getting people looking at things in different ways. So when I was a high frequency trader, I used to have to take a 2-week block leave to make sure I wasn't hiding trades. And before I left, even though I was, when you're a front office trader, you have to take a block leave. And so I have to document what's going on in the market and how my algorithms worked and how, how to run my book. And even though I was the expert at that market or that algorithm, there'd always be some improvement when I got back. Even if it's small, but people would just start challenging like how everything was being run, and they would find things that just because I'm looking at it day in and day out, I wouldn't find. So at Leverage, we do quarterly rotations where the person that does payroll does customer success and customer success. Just for like a week out of the quarter, but that's to stress test the system so that if all of a sudden we get a bunch of people that quit, or just to make sure that we don't get too relaxed in doing things because that's the way that they've always been done. So that's my really explanation cool. of come up for air.
No, I love it. The quarterly rotation, I'll have to talk to our team about that one. I'd be terrible at Jake's job as a designer though. He'd come back and no color whatsoever and everything would look terrible.
Yeah, just everything's black and white.
Right. Well, I'm fascinated. Again, you've done so many cool things. And I know one of the things you guys are looking at right now, you mentioned you're working with Nora, who a lot of our community knows as far as Nora Sadooth, and created our Certified Partners program years ago. And you're looking at changing the way that agencies are run. So if you don't mind, give me some ideas as far as what you guys are looking at doing.
So Leverage, which is the website's getleverage.com if you want to check it out. Leverage is like a new type of agency. So rather than going to the traditional agency where you have to put up like a 10 or 20K retainer per month, we've made it more cost affordable. You pay for whatever you use. And we do things in three main buckets: admin, marketing, and operations. And you could do a small one-off task, or you could have us do a whole app for you. So we've helped people get renters for their home. That would be an admin task, book travel, do research. But then on the marketing side of things, we do a lot of podcast production, podcast marketing. We've created books, funnels. We've designed people. Whenever I give a talk, they design the PowerPoint. I'm a writer for Inc. I audio record all of my content in a cab when I have downtime, and I send that to the writer, and they write the article, post it on Inc, and then they blast it on social media. We've helped people, get a ton of followers on Instagram. And then on the operation side of things, we'll help people automate processes, document processes, set up CRMs, do customization with a CRM, set up Shopify sites, et cetera. So what we're talking with Nora about, which I'm really excited, one of the things historically with Leverage is we would always do something as a custom project or task. But in the 3.5 years we've seen, Dave, that a lot of people are requesting these funnel build outs, book launches, course launches, et cetera. So, and then also just like conversion audits. We've been just getting people to come to us like, hey, we would love a conversion. Like, will you take a look at our funnel and just tell me what you think? So what we've been talking to Nora about is helping us to kind of create some fixed item menu projects and tasks in the funnel space that are well defined, that people can just like click a button and say, oh, I want a conversion audit. I'm gonna get the traffic strategy, the messaging, the offer, the delivery, this much money. So we're starting off with the conversion audit because that's kind of the easiest intro to someone. But then what we're also in the background figuring out now is a full done for you funnel. So Leverage is unique in the sense we have people in all different skill sets. So it's not like we're just for copywriting or we're just for funnel strategy or just design. So we're uniquely positioned that we could do the full start to finish scope. So we are also figuring out some fixed price for doing a full build out of a funnel from start to finish.
Nick, that is super cool. Super cool.
I'm super excited about this.
It was fun when I saw the two of you guys talking at TNC because I just knew some amazing brainchild was going to come out of your conversation. Yeah. So it was fun just to see the two of you guys talking.
Yeah, we were just like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. This is awesome.
So one of the things you were talking about as far as this whole idea, as far as a conversion audit, give people a little more, because for a lot of people, everyone talks about traffic and everything else, but it seems to be like this nebulous thing that people don't understand. I want to run traffic and I want to make things work, but I don't know exactly what that means. How does your conversion audit, what are you looking at? What are the things that people should be paying attention to? What do they need to provide to you? Things of that sort.
So for one thing, so we're going to have two different buckets. One, if they already have something that they want audited, and then another thing, if they want from scratch, like a new strategy built up. Well, one thing though, that most people aren't thinking about with these things, and me being a data scientist, it's kind of the first thing I think of is, well, how do you define success? You know, how are you analyzing the data? Because a lot of people, our clients included, they'll ask us to do Facebook ads or something, and they don't have good systems or metrics to even know, are they making money or losing money with these things? So everything else aside, I think that's something important. And if you're running traffic, you should know your numbers, and whether it's Leverage or someone else, you should set up some type of dashboards and some analytics to be capturing that, because flying blind with that stuff is a super dangerous game to play.
Oh, it's so crazy you mentioned that. I literally was just talking to Dan Martell about some SaaS metrics and things that we were looking at. And that was one of his biggest things was, you know, people just don't understand the importance of tracking their numbers in business. And they look at their numbers at the end of the year and think, oh, did I make money or did I not make money? I think I made money, I think. And it's just fascinating to me how frequently people wait. You can't even wait a quarter. I mean, I look at churn numbers on a daily basis and other metrics on a weekly basis. But I think the biggest problem I find for a lot of people is, especially when they first get started, is they think, oh, it doesn't matter. I'm like, that's when it matters the most. Because for a lot of you, that's when they don't have the money. It's like every dollar counts.
Totally. I mean, it's, and then one thing that we take data super seriously at Leverage. We're using some really interesting, we use a tool called Mode Analytics, which you have to be a data scientist to really use. It's kind of like a level BI software. But one thing is to be looking at churn, but another thing is just to go even deeper, decompose your churn. Maybe there's different types of churn. Like for me, there's churn because of quality versus engagement versus failed payment. So then decomposing your churn into those buckets and seeing over time when you make a change, how does it affect each of those three subsets of churn? But then also taking it even a step further and like, what are the leading indicators of churn? So for me, for engagement churn, a leading indicator is looking at, you know, how much they're using the service. So if we can kind of identify that, hey, if someone doesn't use a service for more than 10 days, they're 50% more likely to cancel, you know, then we start looking at that, those kind of metrics. And then we have account managers take a look at them. But another thing that metrics has done for us is, rather than having our account managers call or try to do a marketing campaign to 300 or 500 people to try to get them to go to a higher level service, like an annual plan or the next tier, you know, you can, with the data, you can figure out who's the most likely. And then instead of 1,000 people, you get it down to 10 and you make the account manager's job way easier.
Oh, sure.
So those are all types of things, but if you don't know your numbers, I wouldn't be doing Facebook ads. But the type of stuff, like I mentioned before, traffic strategy. So how are you getting people to the funnel in the first place? Giving you copywriters on our team to look at your messaging, like what is the messaging on the website, the email, the ads, you know, what is the offer and giving some suggestions, you know, is it free plus shipping, whatever the type of funnel is, giving some feedback on the offer. And then, you know, lastly, it's the delivery of it.
I love that. You know, we've spent a lot of time on this whole concept as far as hook, story, and offer. And I think for me, I think for a lot of our team, we typically like to start with the offer first. Because you can build up a good enough offer, you then understand what are the stories you need to tell to basically get that offer sold, and then what are the hooks you need to get to people to get engaged to even listen to the story. And I appreciate, I know you guys are very systematic over there, and tons of systems in place that help people get through that. And I think for people who aren't as creative, it's one of the things they struggle with the most is, how do I get started? So what are some of the things on your side when you're looking at this idea as far as building out these types of funnels, or even on the conversion audit, when a person gets stuck mentally, what are some of the things or the tools that you guys are using to help them think more creatively?
When they get stuck on a funnel, or when they get stuck on what to outsource?
Actually both.
Well, getting stuck on what to outsource is an easy one, because most people aren't thinking about outsourcing. And the trigger that I recommend is, what are you doing on a daily or weekly basis that you don't get joy from or doesn't tap into your unique ability? So if you are the CEO of a company and you are not a Facebook ad specialist or a really great copywriter, and you're doing the Facebook ads and copywriting, like, that would be a trigger. You know, maybe there's someone better qualified at a lower hourly rate on top of that to do it. So, you know, some people like to do low level work because they find it relaxing. You know, Mark Cuban's known for doing his own laundry because he finds it relaxing. So obviously his hourly rate's more than some of the laundry. But on the other part of your question, I think defining success and being able to measure success is one of the most important things with funnels and with almost any project in general, to be honest. And a lot of people don't take the time up front to think about those types of things.
I love it. I know that's been one of the main things. It's been fascinating for me as I take a look at where we've come in just literally the last almost a year now, as we've started to go from, it was Steven and Russell just kind of working together, to now having an agency. And as you start to scale an agency and you have people who are focused in different areas, it's been just so intriguing for me to see that growth, and how, kind of like what you mentioned earlier, just having someone else's eyes to look on it can then trigger some of the thoughts of, like, oh yeah, I didn't think about that. We, again, referring back to this last week, Julie started working on the onboard, and we had some of our product guys there, and they're like, oh, I never thought about that. I never thought about the location of this on the page, or it logically would make sense. It would go this way, but artistically it doesn't. And so I think it's, that kind of stuff is really helpful. So thank you.
Oh, and you can go fast in a couple ways. One, you just go fast. But another way to go fast is you de-risk the company to minimize those roadblocks and bottlenecks that come up that slow you down. And if you can remove those things that slow you down, that's another way of going faster. And one of the biggest things that people get slowed down, I know myself included, is if someone quits and then all of a sudden all that knowledge just gets lost, and then you have to onboard someone, like, you've just moved really fast, and then you hit this, like, this fork in the road, or this massive hurdle, and then you're like 3 months back now getting someone else. So as opposed to, you know, if you would have moved a bit slower, but then you smooth out those spikes, that's another way to look at these things. So back to kind of what we said with Slack, you might use Slack, but maybe you're not using it in the best way. And one thing that I really recommend is using channels versus direct messages. So if you're having a lot of private conversations with someone versus maybe you're having a discussion with someone for their comp and it's a one-to-one direct message. Well, if you're the head of HR or finance and then you leave, well, how are we going to find, like, that history? So maybe there should be a channel, that person's name, or comp dash that person's name. And that's where you should be discussing the comp. So then you can add and remove people to the channel and the whole history is there, and you don't waste a week, you know, back and forth with this person. So just as an example, there's a lot of little things you can do with these softwares that everyone's using in a bit smarter way to avoid some of those obstacles that will inevitably come up.
You know, when we were at TNC, one of the things you made mention of was this whole idea of Slack and naming channels and this whole nomenclature and the way in the system.
I know we're running short on time here for you, but do you have just like a few minutes you can kind of explain what are some of the things using Slack specifically from a naming standpoint?
So what I said earlier was the name of the game is to find the information as quickly as possible. Whether it's an email, like a lot of people misuse email and they have a ton of folders whereas they could just, if they knew like how to search properly, they could find it. Same with Slack. So one thing I recommend is having just one or two kind of system owners of Slack so that you avoid everyone in the company just spinning up channels. So that way you can create some type of consistency. I suggest as much as possible having private channels because a lot of people don't know what's good for them and they'll start joining channels that they don't necessarily need to be a part of. And in a non-trivial way, they start to waste a lot of time. But then lastly, naming conventions. So Slack doesn't have a foldering system, but it's ordered alphabetically. So you could force the order of the channels by putting a number in front. So you could, one thing you could do is each department could have a number, but even if you don't want to do the numbers, if you have a finance department, you could have finance-payroll, finance-credit cards, finance-receipts. If you have HR department, you could have HR-onboarding, HR-offboarding, HR-payroll. So what we've done is we've mapped our org chart to Slack channels. And then as we need more channels, we know, oh, it's this department name dash, and then whatever the new topic is. And because what you end up, it's a bit of a balancing or a dance that you have to play, but if you have just too few channels and then you have a lot of mixed conversations, you end up having to add a lot of people and they're having to read a lot of things that they don't need to be reading. And then kind of back to principle number one, you want to find stuff as easily as possible. So if you have just a finance general channel, it's not going to be as easy to find a payroll question as if you had a finance-payroll channel. Make sense?
Awesome. Well, Nick, thank you so much for your time. I could talk to you for hours on end. I appreciate you're so organized and systematic, and I it's a skill set I admire immensely. So
I admire you and everything that you guys build. It's really remarkable what you guys have done over there.
Well, thank you. Well, I know people are going to want to reach out to you. What's the best way for them to get a hold of you?
So they could just go to getleverage.com. My email is nick@getleverage.com. That's my personal email address. So feel free to email me. I'm pretty good about responding and I have a good system for that.
I'm sure you do. Well, good seeing you, my friend. We'll talk soon.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks so much for listening to another episode of Funhacker Radio. We are about ready though to change some things. And I wanted to kind of reach out real quick and let you understand some of the things you're going to see happening real quick here. Probably about the middle of April of 2019, we're actually going to be changing the kind of the format and really the purpose of this podcast. So up to this point, I've been spending a lot of time interviewing some of our funnel hackers and things and telling their stories. We're going to continue to do that, but we're going to add in a new little twist. Currently, right now, as of today, we are just under 78,000 customers currently using ClickFunnels. And what we thought is, why not have you guys come join us on the journey to create a culture of 100,000 rabid, excited funnel hackers? So what I'd like to do is just invite you along. Continue to, if you don't mind, rate, review the podcast. Let us know if other people, even possibly outside of our funnel hacker community, would like us to bring in an interview. And really want to make sure that you understand the purpose of this podcast is to help you in building your culture and building your community, your tribe, and really helping you understand what it takes to build a community of super, super excited, passionate customers who rave about your service. More importantly, they spend time talking about it, referring clients to you. So with that said, join us as we on our journey to over 100,000 customers. And we're going to try to get this done before the end of 2019. So thanks so much for listening. Rate and review this and enjoy the journey.